This is the TriDot Podcast. TriDot uses your training data and genetic profile combined with predictive analytics and artificial intelligence to optimize your training, giving you better results in less time with fewer injuries. Our podcast is here to educate, inspire, and entertain. We'll talk all things triathlon with expert coaches and special guests. Join the conversation and let's improve together.
Welcome to the show, everybody. I am really excited for today's episode of the TriDot Podcast. I mean, I always am, but today is a little extra special. Today is a little less triathlon how-to and a little more TriDot storytelling as we take a look back at the preseason project, how it has evolved over the years, and how TriDot has applied the data received from preseason project athletes to revolutionize triathlon training. Let's get going. First up, joining me today is TriDot founder and CEO, Jeff Buer. Jeff is the chief architect behind TriDot's insight optimization technology that powers TriDot training. He's a multiple Ironman finisher who has coached dozens of professional triathletes and hundreds of successful age groupers since he began coaching in 2003. Jeff, thanks for joining me today.
Absolutely. This is going to be a fun one.
Next up is Coach John Mayfield, a successful Ironman athlete himself. John leads TriDot's Athlete Services, Ambassador, and Coaching Programs. He has coached hundreds of athletes ranging from first-timers to Kona qualifiers and professional triathletes. John has been using TriDot since 2010 and coaching with TriDot since 2012. John, you excited to talk about the preseason project?
Always excited to talk about preseason project.
And who am I? I am Andrew, the average triathlete, voice of the people, captain of the middle of the pack, and preseason project alumni year 2019, I think, 2018, 2019. So we're going to get going today with the warm-up question before moving on to everything you could ever possibly want to know about the preseason project. And then we're going to get cooled down by hearing a little from crowd favorite Coach Elizabeth James. She's going to tell us how she went from a preseason project athlete to TriDot coach to professional triathlete. That's the dream, to come in and go pro. So she's going to tell us her story. Lots of great stuff. Let's get to it.
Time to warm up. Let's get moving.
With all the hours triathletes spend outside, training, and on the race course, tan lines and sunburns are basically a rite of passage into the sport. For the most part, we all end up with a fairly defined line showing where our socks and sleeves came to an end. But beyond that, we all have at least one story of a more extreme tan line or sunburn that was just a little extra special. Guys, for our warm-up today, tell me about a time you got a memorable mark from too much time in the sun. John, I'll start with you.
So, yeah, gosh, lots of opportunities and lots of sunburns and funky tans over the years. The one that really comes to mind, though, was, gosh, a long time ago, actually involved. So everybody knows Cindy. Athlete support Cindy. Everybody knows and loves Cindy.
If you've ever asked a question to TriDot support, Cindy hooked you up, helped you out.
Exactly. And if you did an orientation, chances are it was with Cindy. So everybody knows and loves Cindy. Cindy and her husband, Ronnie, were instrumental in getting me into triathlon many years ago. They had one of the first Try for Him chapters, and it was in the area where I was. So I connected with Ronnie and Cindy years and years ago, and I've ridden literally thousands of miles with Cindy's husband Ronnie, and this was back, I don't remember what we were training for, but this was back when my kids were little and we're doing Saturday morning activities. And so this particular day, Ronnie and I went out by ourselves. It was later in the day, and we live on the Texas Gulf Coast, just north of Galveston Island, and our usual route was basically riding down to Galveston. So pretty typical winds. We had a headwind on our way out and a tailwind on the way back. And this particular day, it was an excruciatingly high wind. I could only guess as to what it was. It was probably 50 plus. That's an exaggeration, but that's what we do.
No, I'm sure that's exactly what it was.
So we had 50 mile an hour headwinds, and it was also in the middle of summer, very intense sun. So the two of us were working together. It took everything we could. We were doing like 3 second pulls and just trying to stay vertical. I think we were probably doing like 12, 13 miles an hour in the draft and just doing like 3 seconds pulls because that was all we could do. So anyway, it took us a really long time to get down to our U-turn. And back then, I will say this, kit design has improved a lot in the last several years. Back then, your traditional triathlon jersey was barely long enough to meet the shorts. So if you were bent over in arrow position,
is this turning into a triathlon tramp stamp story?
Yes. So you've spoiler alert, that's what it is. So I remember this day, it was just incredibly difficult. It took us forever to get down to our basically 20-mile turnaround. It was a lot of fun on the way back. I think I hit like a flat speed record. We were doing over 40 miles an hour on the flat because we had, again, a 50-mile-an-hour tailwind at that point. But, man, when I got home, I had the worst sunburn on my lower back. And ironically, as confirmed by my Tridot physiogenomics data, when I did my ancestry, I am very Nordic. I'm very Western European. That's pretty much all I am.
Blonde hair, blue eyes.
I do not tan.
Yeah.
So this should have been a sunburn, been uncomfortable for a couple of days, and then faded into oblivion like every other sun exposure I ever had. But for some reason, this odd-looking, as you would call, tramp stamp, stuck with me for probably several years, literally like months later, maybe a year later. I still had kind of this like half moon right above my pant line from that one ride. Might still be there. I haven't looked.
I haven't either. So
we'll just go. It's still there. I still have it.
Yeah. I wonder if Triathlon Tramp Stamp could be a good relay team name.
Absolutely.
So Jeff, what about you? What's your best suntan sunburn triathlon story?
I don't burn too much usually. Guess I'm a little different there in the
genetics. Not as Nordic.
Less blonde.
But some of my worst sunburns though have been coaching, primarily our junior team, where you're out there, they're doing multiple laps, draft legal, round and round, and four races a day. So you're out there 7-8 hours just not thinking about it, and then the neck and the ears and all that. But
While you're taking care of multiple youth athletes,
yeah,
you're not thinking about the sun. You're thinking about your athletes and what
absolutely,
they're doing.
Absolutely. Yeah. And then, like, holy cow, I'm, pretty red. But it tans pretty quick. Actually, my story, though, that I thought was the funniest, just relating when you were just asking that question about a rite of passage and kind of that sentiment. You've heard the joke, how do you tell an Ironman, how do you pick an Ironman out of a group?
Yeah, out of a crowd.
Yeah, you don't have to. They'll let you know.
Yeah,
it's kind of like Ironman and vegans. You don't have. They'll work it in somehow.
Yep.
But that starts at a very, very early age. So our junior team, again, they're exceptional athletes, all elite. Top ranked, one of the top ranked teams in the country. But I noticed that when they were down there racing, they would have their tri-tats on their arm, and they would leave them on even after they've raced and the next day and get a suntan. So they'd try to get tans so that when they get back to school, people are asking them, even when the numbers are gone.
What's that?
They leave the numbers on, but then there's a suntan there that's for 2 weeks. And the numbers, what's that?
I was
racing in Iowa.
Oh.
Or I was like, whatever.
I didn't realize that was still
at Nationals. Yeah. So it's just like, an Ironman tattoo on your calf. It was pretty cool. Just excited to be there and just kind of that distinction, I guess.
For a few weeks, they're able to suntan a little race tattoo under the arm.
Absolutely. So I thought that was pretty cool and definitely hit home with me.
Yeah, that's great. The inspiration for this question, I was thinking back to my first half Ironman. When I run, like a lot of people, I like to wear a hat, and frequently I'll turn that hat around backwards. Well, I've done half marathons, and I've done long training sessions, and for whatever reason, I don't know if just the sun was super intense this particular day. But I was wearing my hat backwards.
Did you have a half moon on your forehead?
Spoiler alert.
Gotcha.
John and I spoiler alerting each other.
Been there.
But no, so I finished the race, go back to the hotel room, grab a shower, and I get out. We're about to head to dinner after the race, and my wife just starts laughing. And she's like, "Have you looked at your forehead?" I was like, "No." And it was so deeply ingrained from the sun, like the little half crescent moon, just what you talked about, just same mark, different location.
Yeah.
And so on my forehead for weeks, I went back to work. This is before I worked for Tridot, so I have a regular non-triathlon day job, and so I'm going to work, at the television studio I worked at, and I'm wearing hats, and because I looked ridiculous, just very proudly on my forehead was this very deeply suntanned mark of exactly where my hat had been placed on backwards during that race.
I think at this point we would be remiss if we did not remind the listeners that sun protection is very important and skin cancer is very real. So lather up with some sunscreen and avoid the embarrassing tan lines and don't get skin cancer.
On to the main set. Going in three, 3, 2, 1.
Our main set today is brought to you by TriTats. Whether you're a seasoned Ironman or gearing up for your first local sprint try, TriTats will help you make your mark. These tough, stylish, and easy-to-use race number tattoos make you look and feel like a pro. I personally have raced countless local sprint and Olympic tries where I showed up thinking I had plenty of time to settle in the transition, only to find a massive line waiting to be body marked. Switching to TriTats has allowed me to show up on race morning with my focus on the finish line, not the body marking line. If you have an Ironman race this year, their Iron Tats are made especially for you. Iron Tats body mark you for that one key race and include the all-famous M-Dot logo. Friends don't let friends race with Sharpie on numbers. So as a friend of the podcast, head to TriTats.com and use promo code TRIDOT for 10% off your order. Again, that's TriTats.com, promo code TRIDOT. It's for sure a bold statement to say that TriDot's preseason project athletes have helped revolutionize triathlon training. But once you've begun training with TriDot, you quickly find this statement to be true. TriDot's training structure changes the way training plans are generated. It changes the way athletes train, and it changes the way coaches coach, all for the better. And the best part of it all that we're going to focus on today is this. TriDot does all of this with your data and your feedback. Today, Jeff and John are going to show us how TriDot's athletes through the years of preseason project are the ones empowering the TriDot training revolution. So, John, why don't you kick us off by describing for those who don't know what TriDot's preseason project is in the form we know it today.
So preseason project is a year-long research study that we do every year. It runs from the preseason, which is generally defined as late October through February, and then into the race season. So qualified participants get 2 free months of TriDot training. Qualifications are pretty simple. You have to have raced a triathlon before. You have to be racing at least an Olympic distance race in the season to come, not be a coach and not be a pro. And all those things are put in place to maintain quality of the research that we do. That helps us standardize the data so that we can evaluate and have a legitimate study here and draw meaningful conclusions from it. So the purpose of preseason project is... again, it further optimizes the TriDot training. And then we're also able to demonstrate the incremental gains of those that train with TriDot and compare those to those that do not.
Well, I'm excited to hear a lot more about this. When I first came on as an athlete, I still remember the day about a year and a half ago when I first saw the ad on Facebook for, you know, TriDot training, you know, preseason project, get 2 months TriDot training free in return in exchange for, you know, your data. And I remember seeing it. My first thought was like, oh, that has, like, I was excited about it because I actually at the time was looking for a structured way to train. And when I saw that ad, I was like, okay, like, I'm going to try it for 2 months. That's a very generous amount of time they get to try a training program. But I thought it was kind of a marketing gimmick. Right, I'm like, okay, you know, they're saying they need my data, but they just want me to try their training for 2 months so that I'll like it, so that I'll be willing to pay for it after the 2 months. And then I got on, you know, involved as an athlete, and I started learning. Oh man, like there is just what you said, John. There is so much a benefit for TriDot in the athletes' data that we receive from the preseason project. So I'm really excited to dive into this, talk a little bit more about that. I have all sorts of questions, like why do we do this in the preseason? You know, how and why are the athletes qualified? How can you afford to give your product away for free for 2 months to so many athletes? How does preseason project help TriDot improve and quantify things like training effectiveness? You know, how many athletes have participated in the preseason project? I have tons of questions, John.
Yeah, there's a lot of questions. So, man, that last one is one of the really cool ones. So, as I said before, this is a research program in the triathlon space. So your and there have been lots of those over the years, but your normal sample size, if you go in and read a triathlon related study, typically you're in is N equals 10, N equals 12, your sample size, how many people they're testing, and drawing conclusions and then applying them to everyone, typically is fewer than 20. I would say your standard sample size is anywhere from single digits to maybe a couple dozen.
And you even think on the generous end of what you just said would be 100. And within 100 different athletes, there might be 4 or 5 that are like you or like me to learn from.
And even then, generally what they're doing is they're qualifying their participants. They're looking for athletes that meet a particular definition or demographic. And then they're doing research on them.
It's, you know, 20 highly trained cyclists or 20 untrained cyclists, and they do the study. So it's at one end of the spectrum or the other.
And then they apply the findings across the board to everyone. So one of the things that really differentiates Preseason Project is the sample size. So we have actually had over 15,000 athletes participate in the Preseason Project over the last several years.
That's a big group.
Yeah, and that equates to over $3 million in value of the training that has been given away.
Yeah, so in all those 2 or 3 months of training to that many athletes, that's about $3 million of free training TriDot's given.
Yeah, because the training program that we give away for 2 months is a known cost to that. It's $99 a month, so each athlete is receiving $200 in benefit, $200 worth of free training. $3 million in free training that's been given out.
I mean, that's absolutely an astounding number, like when you hear it quantified, right?
And so based on that, what we want to do is recognize the contribution of all these past participants, these 15,000 athletes that have made TriDot better. We want to acknowledge that and pass along appreciation.
All the athletes who are alumni of the Preseason Project.
Yeah, and then give our current Preseason Project participants an appreciation for all that's gone into it. So this is based on more than 15,000 athletes, and we've had 15,000 in the Preseason Project, and that's not all the athletes that have provided data. So again, we have thousands of athletes that are providing data. So these athletes that are new to Preseason Project and new to TriDot training, they're able to see this is actually what their training is based on. Their training isn't based on one person's theory or one person's philosophy or education or experience. It's actual analysis of data from thousands of athletes. So we're not looking at a small sample size or one person's opinion. It's actual data from thousands of triathletes.
I mean, that's one of the things that I've, you know, the more I learn about TriDot, the more I get excited about, you know, you see the numbers on the website of training with TriDot will help you improve this many times and all of that. I mean, this is the data that is quantifying those type of statistics. So, I just as an athlete, you love seeing that there's actual learning and there's actual science and there's actual a quantified way of figuring out that data. That it's not just empty claims, right?
Yeah, and we can highlight some of those milestones and results and really how those benefits have changed the way that we train, the way we race, and the way that we coach triathletes.
Yeah, so let's get into it. Jeff, why don't you just start by describing how it began? I would love for you and John to just walk us through how the Preseason Project has emerged into what it is today. So take me back to day one. Where did this all come from?
Yeah, actually, it started before it started. So there was an origin that we built on later that became Preseason Project. Yeah, back in 2011. And back then, all of the training analysis, the sample sizes were bigger. They were hundreds, not thousands. And it was a very iterative process. So we'd do training phases or periods of time where we'd have the algorithms and the thresholds and, you know, all of the things that we did to optimize a training set. And then we watch a big cohort of athletes go through the training, measure results, make adjustments, and then do it again. And so we started in 2011. It was just a continuation of that normal process, but it was really benchmarking and measuring the effectiveness of TriDot at that time. We'd spent 6-7 years to that point normalizing all the iterations, doing the standardization, adding context, abstracting the algorithms based on different demographics to affect the training decisions made, and that would later lead to the full scale. So this is kind of all the preparatory work leading to the big data stuff that we do today. So before there was a project at all per se, we were just doing this, and the focus of that time was really measuring the off season, as we called it, because that was just an extremely important time of the year to do the analysis.
And so why is that? Why is that kind of the more important time of year to do that?
Well, you might recall from episode 10, the power stamina paradox.
Yeah.
During the off season, when you're not training for another event, another race, you're able to focus on the training that needs to be done to increase functional threshold or work on form. And it doesn't have the influences of someone doing a race in 3 weeks. So they can't really do what they should do to improve their performance. They need to either taper, get ready for the race, or recover from a race. And so it's that time, several months, where you can get a big group of athletes that's not gonna, that's gonna have very pure training and with one objective.
Yeah.
You know? And so that was real important. So it removes that racing impact on your schedule, allows you to isolate based on FTP and form improvement. And the challenge then was finding athletes that were serious. A lot of athletes, you know, quit and stopped training consistently during the off season. And so we really tried to impress upon the athletes the importance of that off season training and prove how much you can improve. Prove how much you can improve during that time.
I mean, that's a distinguishment. When I came in, I mean, I think most athletes view, you know, that time in the winter months when there's not races, they view that as an off season. Whereas here at TriDot, we call that the preseason yep. project.
Originally is off season, and okay. we're in exactly right. And so we changed it, and that'll kind of come in the future years, that recognition and the way to, how do we communicate that. So this was not named at the time. It was just a thing we did, but it was retroactively look back for years. It was the 2011 off season. And so we had that time was just very precious and priceless, you know?
So how big was that group of athletes that you really started looking at?
It was right at 100 athletes. They were all 30 to 55 was probably 80% of them, 90% of them.
I make the cut. 31 years old, I made the cut.
And that was ones that were, the training had to be, the average was about 14 weeks. Give or take a week or two, we normalized it to have consistent results. And then the other thing is they couldn't be doing a half or full marathon. A lot of people do marathons.
Oh, yeah.
And the cool, so we could had to filter out those people.
That would skew them getting ready for that marathon.
Yeah, their training objectives would be different. And so we ended up with about 100 at that time.
So how did it go with that first study, with that first 100?
It was back then, we did the 800-meter time trial.
It was an 800-meter time trial?
So we didn't do the CSS 400,
200. An 800? Oh,
yeah.
Man.
So
I'm never going to complain about the 400 ever again.
So here's the time trial results. So for 800, it was a 2-minute and 23-second improvement over that 14 weeks. For the 15-mile bike time trial, it was 3 minutes and 11 seconds faster. For the 10K, it was 3 minutes and 20 seconds.
I mean,
so
that's
14 weeks. Yeah,
that's
a little
significant.
More than three. Absolutely.
I mean, if you're taking off, 32 seconds per mile off your run split, that's, I mean, for that 15-mile bike, I mean, 3 minutes, I mean, just for yeah. perspective for folks, that's adding 2 miles per hour.
Yep.
I mean, all of us would dream of adding 2 miles per hour to our
and
functional
then,
threshold.
Yeah, I guess the rates are a little easier to understand. 800, that's 17.8 seconds. So about 18 seconds per 100 faster on your threshold, 2.1 miles an hour faster, and 32 seconds per mile on your 10K pace. So those are very, very significant.
Yeah, I mean, I would call that super successful for all of those athletes. So was that kind of the results you expected?
It was. It was, this was the first time with a bigger group. Like he said, we have 20, 40,
yeah.
and then none of them are the same. So this, we're already seeing some little groups within the groups of who's improving more and why. But we needed to scale this further. So that was, the results were great. We needed to scale it, and we needed to figure out how to communicate the results. Because when we say this, we did a lot of webinars and different things telling people, and they just didn't believe you.
Yeah.
And so it's like, so that was a challenge coming out of that year. So this is going into 2012. During 2012, you know, how do we communicate it? And then how do we just get more athletes through us? Now we've refined even further, make adjustments based on that. And so we move forward to, 2012.
Yeah, so with the fresh lessons that you learned from that very first year, I mean, what happened in the sophomore, 2012 campaign of preseason project?
Well, that was a big year going, actually, it's 2012 going into 2013. We were struggling to find a way to share it with more people. Like, how do we get more people to experience this? One, we want it for them, but two, we want more people because we need more data. More data, we can eliminate more noise. We can be more granular with the training, the measurements. Back then, so many athletes just relied on the education level of a coach or a success of a pro or just really accomplished athlete. Oh, they must know how to train, even though I'm nothing like them or maybe like them. You know, they did whatever. So it was very hard to communicate what we're doing and where does our credibility come from, these results. But then, and the cool thing was like we could repeat the results. We knew it. We do these same things from year to year and we're getting better and better and better because it's a repeatable process based on the data. So when we went out there, we try to highlight, well, you have these experts, a world champion here and a world champion there. They're both very successful, but they're telling you two different things about your training.
Oh, two very different things.
And they're not repeatable. So how, all if what they're saying is the best way to train, then all of their athletes should be doing better.
And,
but they're
and
not.
Pro athletes, you know, start telling you how they train. It's like, well, you're a pro. Like,
yeah, different genetics, different age, different.
You should be training differently than me.
Things. And so that was kind of the battle that how do we explain and share? So we're trying to educate. We thought about sponsoring a big time pro, but you know, we didn't want to go that route. So explain it to them and say, here's how it works, and you know, let them use it. Again, the algorithms are. Well, certainly fast enough for pro. We've had, you know, 350 half Ironman times and 830.
Sheesh.
Full Ironman. So it's real fast, but we're gearing toward the age grouper, the elite, the age grouper that wants to, I don't want to say the elite, but the one that wants to improve.
Yeah.
If you care about a goal, I don't care if it's a finishing goal.
If you want to get faster on less time with fewer injuries.
That's our sweet spot. That's who we wanted to go after. So we didn't want to go, plus just that the ethical issue. I don't feel comfortable relying on someone else's past accomplishment and somehow trying to transfer a relay because they were a world champion back in the day or even currently. They didn't do that using Tridot. They didn't get here using our product. I don't want them to sponsor and promote it. I'm happy for them to say, hey, this is great, looks good, but not in the sense of trust me because I'm so fast, then you use it. They didn't use it.
I'm a pro. I'm being paid to endorse this, so you should use it. Like,
but we're left with still the problem exists. All the traditional routes, other than just trying to educate people and explain and get attention to, you know, how do you understand? So when people take time and pause and understand, then they go, okay. Or if they heard word of mouth from a person, they're understanding. And that's a very slow process, and we needed more data. So we really had a breakthrough. As I was working with a consultant on a number of things, strategic, and after several months, we were just really struggling, and he called me or texted me super early and say, hey, I got it, you know, let's talk. And so he saw, and he came up with this brilliant model. He goes, actually, he's a new parent. I had a couple young kids and wanted to raise them right and just be a good dad. And he said, I heard this thing on the radio. They said that if you buy their kid program, it's like $350, raising kids, you pay your money, you get it, you go through the first two chapters, fill out the work at the back, you know, they give you a little assignment, do this with your kid and whatever, you fill them out, send them in, we'll give you all your money back. So you get this training program for free. And he goes, it's so cool. I think that'll work. Because one, you have skin in the game.
Yeah.
You know, okay, I'm committed. And if you're not committed, then that's on you, not on us. You know, we're doing our part. We're making it available. Anyway, so that we worked through it. We spent probably two full months working through the details. We actually found the lady that set that up for that company. And she was gracious enough to work through some of the
and kind of talk through how to create a program like that for Tridot.
Here's the operational things. Here's the practical things you never think of that becomes a problem. Here's how you make it clear to athletes. You know, everyone's skeptical coming in, so here's how you present it in a very transparent way, so there's no surprises. But it was extremely costly. We spent 2 months, he and I, literally almost full time, just putting that together, the infrastructure, how it works, how do we market it. So there's a whole lot of cost, a whole lot of risk in the time. And what if it flops? In the fear at that time, it was like, we're bootstrapping. We don't have a lot of cash. So we spend all this time, all this money, promote it. Then what if everybody out there does it and gets their money back and quits?
Yeah.
Like, okay, now that was a very, the data is good, but if they're not continuing,
you're promising that option.
We need some portion of them to continue.
Yeah.
You know, we're willing to make the investment up front and for the long game. That's always been, we're playing the long game. And the feedback that we got from it, so it wasn't just the data, it was actually their feedback. And he said probably the most valuable thing that's going to come out of this is not their data feedback, although that is valuable, but their comments of what did they understand? Why didn't they adhere to the training? What was confusing?
Yeah.
What did they not understand? And we learned a lot from all of that, just baggage they're coming in with.
So you come up with a program and you work through it. I mean, how did you get word out there to athletes that this was now available?
Well, when we started looking at that again, either doing webinars and all these different things, he actually told me when I was dealing with some of those fear things, he goes, well, do you believe in the product or not? And it was kind of a, okay, I know it's going to do what it is. And that was kind of what pushed me over, like, okay, let's commit all this time and money to do this, because I knew that some would continue. And I knew that for years I was, again, passion.
And we're all here today because we continued.
Correct. And so just, took the plunge. So I partnered. I had a lot of friends in the industry with, Terry Laughlin, TI, swimming, effortless swimming, FCA endurance, endurance films. Bobby McGee, folks at UCAN, just people we've been working with for a long time. And I said, hey, you know, let's do a co-promotional webinar on a specific topic and just give some value out there and talk about swim form improvement or nutrition or whatever it is. And at the end, I want to throw this thing. We figured out this name for it. It was called Free for Feedback.
Free training in response for, in exchange for your feedback.
Yeah, you give us your feedback, your data and your comments, and they had a little survey they fill in, send it to us, and then we give them all their money back.
Wow.
When we did it, we kind of got the infrastructure in place. We had, I think, 228 that year, and the feedback was just incredible. We went through, we have a team, and they went through every single packet that got sent back, all of the questionnaires, all of the answers. So that not only did it give us scale for the algorithms on that side, but the most impactful stuff that year was their feedback and their comments of what was confusing and what, you know, what thoughts and beliefs did they come into it with that we had to either re-educate or overcome, or, you know, somehow get them to look at it a different way and see that and have the aha moments.
Yeah, and so the sample size just from year one to year two, I mean, already more than doubled. What did those new athletes see in their results?
It was the same. It was kind of crazy. It's funny. Every year they're about the same or a little bit better. And so it's just gradually moving. The big thing there, because we didn't change a whole lot from the first to the second, it was really great. And the other thing is that we didn't have that comparison group. So this was the first year we were going to have a comparison group where we had some people that continued to use Tridot and other people that didn't. And so that was a benefit in future years, but that came out of this year. So the biggest objectives in that year going into, I guess it was the year after 2013-14, was to demonstrate the improvement based on their feedback. So any negative comment that we got, any confusion, any friction point, our goal going into that next year leading into 2014 was to eliminate the friction. So we had people that had these huge, you know, 3-minute increases in their bike or their 5K run. And then we'd see a comment, yeah, but my 8-mile, you know, is slower now. And we had to educate them, okay, you don't need to be doing 8 miles in January when you're doing a half marathon in August.
Yeah.
You know, and that whole back to that power stamina paradox and understanding there's different types of training. If you're out there trying to push your 8 miles and you're not that fast of an athlete, that's a very long run.
Yeah.
And you're not gonna get that much faster, your threshold. And then during that year, we were also working on our RaceX. And so we had these athletes coming in. And so that extending the study and the research and how we track that first year, it was only the off season by itself. And so we were trying to quantify the benefits of racing in the off season compared to only in the in season. So
training in the off season versus training in season.
Correct. So, you know, being diligent in off season, being diligent in season, being diligent in both and measuring that. Another big change during that year was based on the feedback was we added, back then we had gold, silver, bronze levels of how much, everything was all coached. There was no non-coached option for Tridot at that point. So Tridot handled the algorithms and the optimization of the training design, but you also worked with a coach to handle a lot of those questions and to, you know, to work with the athletes as a person. And then in that year, we had a whole bunch of people, that was part of the decoupling point that we've mentioned on other podcasts where we're separating the necessity of a coach to optimize your training. So the training can be optimized by technology. You don't need a coach for that. Coaches can help. They can tweak. They can do other things. And there's a whole lot of things beyond optimization of training that coaches do. So we're not suggesting that at all. But that's when we first started offering what we called then a copper subscription. There's a little less, better price point, help more people have access to quality training.
So this is now year three, 2013-2014 season,
yep,
that you're starting to kind of work out the program of what it was like to train with,
yep,
Tridot.
And so it presents challenges. So now you don't have a coach to help educate. So now we're having to put systems and educational things in place to help educate the athletes who don't have access to a coach,
yeah,
for budget or for whatever. But we have more athletes. So that's increasing our numbers. So we have more data, more feedback.
So this is one of the things that we've always wanted to accomplish through Preseason Project is get that very valuable feedback from the athletes. That's that original title of Free for Feedback, and that intent has never gone away. So there were athletes that were asking for subscription options without the coach, and a lot of it revolved around budget. So again, we were able to respond to the customer desire, customer wish, and create that subscription. So this was something that enabled Tridot to to reach more athletes, because now we're able to offer a lower price subscription option. And that's something that we've continued to do and continue to innovate throughout our history. And it's always been a priority. And something that we wanted to do is provide a affordable option for athletes of any budget to be able to have individualized, optimized training. And this is really where it came from, was way back many years ago, responding to feedback from athletes that were participating in the preseason project.
So, John, how did it go with, you know, you got the feedback from athletes and you guys kind of came up with those new objectives on hey, based on the feedback we're starting to get, these are the things we want to change. You know, how did it go with that first objective that you wanted to improve from the 2013 feedback?
So the feedback was actually really encouraging. 83% had either a 4 or 5 on their evaluation on that 5-point scale. 97% were 3 or higher. So what that told us was we were doing things right, but there was room for improvement. And
most people they liked it, they loved it, they were on board, they had some thoughts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, like anything, it was still new. It was still under construction. A lot of it was still, you know, what we thought was clear, or what we thought was explained, or what would work for us, kind of a thing. And what we found out that, you know, what we thought was good was maybe not good for everybody. So something we've always done, and to this day, is resolve to improve. And that's still one of our core values.
Yeah, one of the things, John, I'm sure you can elaborate on this more, because you tell me more often, having more interaction with our athletes, is we found that the higher the ranking, the more engaged the athlete was. And it was when they didn't understand, didn't have a question, that it was a lack of it, generally correlated with a lack of engagement on their part. They hadn't entered a race. They hadn't entered assessments. They didn't engage somehow.
Higher the ranking, so, being the more they liked Tri-Dot. The higher they were ranking.
If they did stuff. Tri-Dot. And that was that skin in the game.
Yeah.
Where, you know, look, they so some of them were just filling out the paperwork, sending it back, but they didn't do anything. They didn't listen to a webinar. They didn't, you know, engage in their training. But they still wanted to, you know, get their money back. So they did that. So we saw that high correlation, and we knew that engagement was the key. And I still think we see that today quite a bit.
People were getting out of it what they put into it. The more they put in, the more they were reaping the benefits.
But that continues to be valuable feedback for us that we want to improve on. We want to make it easy for athletes to engage, so we continue to thrive off the feedback that we're getting from thousands of athletes every year, in that we want our product to be approachable and easy and enjoyable. We know the training works. So we want to remove any barriers that we can, even like I mentioned a minute ago, the financial aspect of it. We want to provide subscription options that are affordable for every budget. And we want to make it clear and understandable, whether you're internet savvy or whether you're not so much, whether you're resistant to technology. We don't want that to be a barrier either. So again, we thrive on this feedback, and we have a commitment to perpetual improvement and just continuing to make the product and the experience better. Both the training is better from the data that the athletes provide, and then the user experience is better from the feedback that is provided as well.
Jeff, you mentioned that another objective from that third year of the preseason project was to measure the impact or the value of training in the off season versus just training during the racing season. What was kind of the results of looking into that?
Yeah, again, so the understanding of this and kind of where we're going is really important, that you understand that power stamina, that you have times of the year where you have to develop that going long capacity. You have your threshold that you can push early in the season, preseason, off season.
Like a few months out from an Ironman, you've got to focus on stamina.
You've got to go long. And so much of your ability to absorb training and improve fitness is going longer, which is at the expense of something else.
So when you're farther out, you can, in the off season, you can focus on
and
power.
And so we're breaking that up. So that's the key this year. So in that 2011-12 study where there's these big improvements, but then, well, how does that relate? Does that mean I'm going to race faster in 4 months after that ends, 5 months? So that was kind of the focus here. We do a whole lot of little studies, but this is kind of the highlighted one from this year, and we call it Subset 7. It was about, this one was 89 athletes that only did 70.3 races. So they didn't do another running, they didn't do a sprint, so it was this pure period of time where they started, they did assessments, they trained, and then they did a race that I think the average was about 168 days, 24 weeks.
Getting ready for that 70.3.
Correct. And the ages were 18 to 76. Average was 44, 63% male, 37 female. So we had this was the first, like I mentioned earlier, the baseline groups. So we have a group of people who gave us their assessments. They told us what races they're doing, and they didn't ever start. So we have this did not start.
They never started training with TriDot. So that's the baseline group you're comparing TriDot training.
That's one. So that's baseline group one, did not start.
Okay.
Baseline group two is the ones that come in the off season. That training period was about 58 days on average. So that's the 2 months. All right. And then we have another group that.
And then they stop after 2 months.
And then they stop. They go do their own thing.
Okay.
And then you have another group that was not part of Free for Feedback. And they just, you know, come spring, 3 months out, hey, I want to start training for this race. And they started using TriDot. So they started, and that's what most people were doing, as still do at the time, about 3-4 months out, they start getting serious about the training.
And so you have big enough sample sizes in each of those groups.
Correct.
To start comparing how are they progressing in their training based on how much they're doing.
And then we had the other group that started during the off season and the Free for Feedback, and then they kept doing it all the way up to their race. And so now we have people that, we have assessments and race results for people who didn't start, those who only did the 2 months free, those that skipped the 2 months free, only trained during the in season, and then the fourth group, the ones that did it all. So it was pretty good. And that was for the Ironman group, we didn't have anyone that stopped using TriDot. So that was great. They started doing in season, that was free, and they go, okay. So that was pretty cool. But for the 70.3 group, everything's pretty proportional. The improvements, and so they translate very well. So this baseline group, we learned that the off-season training was more impactful on race results than the in-season training.
And so many athletes, like, they just kind of, you know, they're a little, they train in the off-season, but probably a little inconsistent, they think they're resting up, and they really think that when they get 3-4 months out from race day, those are the key sessions.
Right.
And so you're telling me
And they're not. That they've already created their ceiling.
Yeah.
So now they're just getting to do up their stamina, their, you know, 70% or whatever percent.
So off-season training helps you raise the ceiling.
That's really a misunderstanding of that power-stamina paradox. And that was that really comes down to.
That's exactly right. And so the numbers, so that off-season period was 58 days. Those athletes improved their race results an average of 18 minutes and 39 seconds. Over a half Ironman. Those that did the in-season only, that period is 75 days. So it's, 25% more time? It was a longer period. It's only 18 minutes.
It's very marginal.
So the ones that did the free 2 hours and then did their own thing.
The free 2 months.
Yes, the free 2 months. And then did their own thing, improved more than those that did more time leading up to their race.
But did
their own thing in the off season.
Wow.
And so, but if you put them both together and the group that did both, they improved 34 minutes. So it's almost twice as effective. So it's not like there's so much gains and you're either going to get it early or going to get it late. It was a cumulative effect. So they improved their power for that first period of time as efficiently optimized as possible. And then they build stamina, maintaining that threshold.
And so when people see the claimed time gains, you know, that TriDot training can give you, I mean, it's from studies like this.
Absolutely.
Where it was very scientifically, you know, laid out. Fans of the scientific method will love this podcast episode, right?
Yep. So that's huge. So those who use both the in-season and the off-season improved, you know, 34 minutes and 58 seconds. So 35 minutes improvement is huge.
So did you guys look at the Ironman distance?
For the whole distance. We didn't have any that only did the free for feedback, the free period and quit. But those that started for the whole off-season and the in-season period, they improved an average of an hour and 17 minutes and 36 seconds. And that was more than the DNS group, those that just did the assessments, but they never finished, but they did go race.
So that gets us through where you guys really established the groundwork for using the preseason project to just learn about triathletes and how they improve, when we improve, at what rates we can improve in our training. So now we're getting into kind of the middle of the decade. You've established it, you know, in the years 2014, 2015, 2016, you know, year 4, 5, and 6 of preseason project. Now these were kind of transitional years for TriDot. You know, there were some new technologies that were developed. You know, you tried some new things. Talk to me about what came out of these middle years.
The middle years were pretty cool. There's a lot of growth. So we're, you know, institutionalizing a lot of our stuff, revamping.
Because now you've done a lot of the learning.
A lot of learning. So we're trying to increase the numbers, but not grow at a rate beyond what we can service. So, I mean, the first year, it was 2014, I think we pulled on 220 athletes in the month of January, new athletes. So that was crazy, having
in
individual call.
Yeah.
And now we'll do that in a day, easy. But back then, it was... It was retooling, you know, learning how to handle that and not let anybody fall through the cracks. So we improved on the free for feedback. Again, the questionnaires, the feedback. We instituted new things. We're just, again, fanatical about the feedback. So reading every single one and really learning on that. That was the 2014 and 15. Just improving upon that, increasing the scale, most of the growth, the same, you know, webinars and word of mouth. So it wasn't huge growth, but it was good growth. And each time is another iteration. You have an off season, end season. We're looking at different groups, different parts of the year. Those that are starting in June and racing and
just gaining more data points.
Yeah. And doing it quicker. So just the systems in place. 2015-16, I can look back now and it was a promotional pause, basically. It was a strategic time. During that time, late 2014, is when I pulled on some outside investors to really upgrade and enhance our tool set and to get an organization that had done some big optimization engine custom work for United Airlines and PG&E and some just big time capabilities. So we spent 10 years now working on thresholds, standardizing, normalization, all the stuff, the preliminary work.
The training.
We have the data. Yeah, the athletes have gone through it, thousands of athletes pushed through. So we're very confident now we can build the thing and know that it's going to work and know where we need to put the hooks to turn the levers of volume, frequency, and duration and intensity, all those things, how to make that granular decision-making in the optimization engine. So that optimization engine was supposed to take about 6 months to build. And so we said, okay, we'll just pause a little while. Let's focus on getting this right. And
to be clear, when we talk about the optimization engine, that's what drives Tridot training.
Yeah,
that's the
insight optimization
engine. The technology that is generating what workout I should do on what days.
Correct. So that's everything. It's the data set, it's the algorithms, it's the normalization, it's the physiogenomics.
And so this is where that was developed.
All of that. Well, a lot of it was already developed to that point, but it's putting it in a thing where we're not, we still have databases, of course, but we're more doing regression analysis and stuff offline. It's not doing machine learning. It's not doing AI. It was just these big algorithms that, produce the plan. And that's where, even at that point, the developers were doing that. And I've mentioned this on another podcast. When a training phase was designed, he was Indian in his accent. He said, "This is just magnificent." He goes, "I was just curious on how many calculations were happening." And so I don't know if it's a query. I don't know what he did exactly. But he checked. It was in Erlang. So you can check the number of simultaneously decision threads, the things that are happening. And he says 11,000 calculations at once going on. And so that had been developed over 10 years. So we need to put that into something that can learn and adapt as we go, as we grow, and being able to not and to do things more real time learning. So we have different versions of the rule sets. We need to look at all athletes and apply that rule set to athletes of all time and all right there. So we put that pause on. In retrospect, it was a lot more costly. We did develop a lot of cool stuff and make it more presentable to athletes, the training stress profile, the bike to run factor. But instead of taking 6 months, that development effort took more than a year and a half.
Wow.
So it kind of wiped us there. We had a lot of athletes. We weren't spending anything. We weren't doing any promotion. And so we're kind of flatline right there growth-wise.
So the middle years weren't growing years. They were developing years.
Correct. We kept doing what we were doing.
Yeah.
We kept learning. But the focus was on this, just really enhancing is the true optimization engine at that point. Before it was, data and algorithms and a lot of technology, but not in this whole next generation that we're doing
but
today.
Yeah, but what that did, though, is it really laid the groundwork for Tridot to then just surge in its growth in 2017, 2018, 2019, and where we are today. And here's the way I like to think of it, because I came on at the end of 2018, and so we're starting to get into the more modern years here. I like to think of it as you were setting the stage for Tridot to really hit its stride just in time for me to join.
That's right. It's all preparation for you.
It's the primary objective.
Yeah. you knew I was coming. So let's start talking about 2017. We're getting a lot of the athletes listening. We'll in these years we'll have recognized, hey, that's the year I came in.
Yep.
So what started happening in the year 2017 once all this was developed?
So one of the biggest changes and that we've been thinking about for then is just changing that. Before it was the off-season project. We say, here's the off-season project, and free for feedback is the way you can do it for free. And the study of the off-season and the years. Back then, all of the things we were talking about would have been a 2011 off-season, 2012, 13, 14, 15 off-season. Now we advanced it a year, and it was now instead of the 2016 off-season, it was a 2017 preseason, because we were really focused on and developed the technology to carry the preseason work through to race and showing impact on race from what they did throughout the season, including the preseason. So restructured it, renamed it. We changed, a big change was from the rebate feedback model. So they give their feedback, they pay up front, and then get a rebate after they pass some stuff in. That was a big thing risk-wise. One is we're giving it away up front. You know, so now it's not them getting the money back. It's 100% free up front. Good things is more people, anyone that's skeptical, they're more likely to do that, which is a plus.
It just removed the barrier of entry.
But they didn't have skin in the game. And so there was a drop in some of the people that did anything with it. So we have more people signing up and coming in, but some of them they don't have to do anything, you know, to get their money back. So there's no incentive, no focus. And so we did see that. But all in all, it was great. It was very beneficial for us to do that. So we added some of the qualifications, kind of enhanced that.
So when you talk about qualifications, and I think it was when I was throwing out all the questions I want to learn in this podcast, what makes an athlete qualify for the preseason project?
So one of the things is race distance. And the athlete has to be racing a Olympic 70.3 or Ironman in the next season. The reason for that oftentimes is, well, I'm a sprint athlete. Why am I excluded? And really, it goes back to the purpose of the preseason project. Preseason project is about evaluating the effectiveness of tri-dot training. The reason we all do tri-dot training is so that we can perform on race day. In order to evaluate the effectiveness on race day, we need to have standardized metrics that we can look at. And really the biggest challenge in evaluating sprint races is we have thousands of athletes from all over the country, but very few of them are racing in the same sprint race. And so we don't have a large enough sample size of athletes racing the same race. And then sprint races are notoriously random in their distance. There is no standardized distance that we could even say, well, this athlete raced in a race in California,
especially,
and this one
the
raced
swim in the bike. The swim and the bike distances are all over the map, if they're even measured correctly.
Exactly. It's a race of a certain distance is basically your sprint. So there's no way to standardize and normalize that data so that we can draw meaningful conclusions. And again, we have very high standards of the data that we use. Whereas with the Olympic, the 70.3 and Ironman distance, those are known quantities. Obviously, there's a certain level, a margin of error on those distances, but that's accounted for. So now when we have Olympic 70.3 and Ironman distance, we can compare races from anywhere. Whether that race be in California or in Florida, we standardize the data and normalize it for things like environment. So if it's at elevation in a cool temperature in Northern California versus at sea level in the heat in Florida, we can still normalize those results to where we can draw meaningful conclusions from that. And that's just not possible in the sprint race. So that's a pretty common question we get. Why not sprint? I personally love sprint races. That's kind of where I got
sprint
my
start. Sprint
races
are a ton of fun.
We are absolutely not anti-sprint.
Yeah.
But really, there are certain challenges that lie in drawing these meaningful conclusions and meeting these high-quality standards based on the sprint racing.
So that non-standard distance is absolutely, that was the first thing.
Yeah.
They're not training stamina. They're only training functional threshold because their normal workouts are longer than the actual race effort. So there's that whole missing piece of the data where it's as long as we get to measure and evaluate both. But the other, like John said, is that sample size in anyone, a big sprint race might be 400, 500, 600 people. You know, we might have half that number. We've had, I guess, several different Ironman races where we might have 300 or 400 athletes doing the race. So when you have that many athletes doing the exact same race on the same day, normalizing and all that doesn't even come into play. You can do within the single race on that exact day. And so that's even better and better data. And then when you're comparing for our normalization standards, if you can have 250, 300 people racing this race, 250, 300 there, now you can evaluate that normalization between two different locations and different elevations, temperatures, humidities. And so, yeah, that sample size of doing the same race is huge. A couple other things on the qualifications or reasons for them. One is you can't have used tri-dot in the past certain amount of time, and that's obviously so people are already doing this. We want to measure the incremental difference that it makes, not a continued difference over time. Yeah, so you're getting people with a big break. They're all coming in fresh, and then you've done at least one triathlon before is a requirement. And that is because some people come in, they're learning the sport, they don't understand maybe training, and there's a lot of beginner gains. Going from sedentary, you have these big gains, and that's people who've never, they've gone from not active to active. And so we want to get people who are in the sport, doing it already, and then take them from an even footing there and watch them throughout the next
season.
That
just helps ensure the data is just quality when we're looking at all these.
And that's also the same for the pros. The pros are going to have very minimal gains in any given time. You know, we're talking about measuring gains over preseason periods and over race seasons. The professional athletes are at the top of their game. They've already arrived at really close to where their gains are going to be very incremental, very slow. And that's kind of the opposite of the first timer that's going to have just massive gains by doing something. So again, it's all about controlling the quality of the data. We love first timers, we love pros, but in order for this, that's why we keep it to seasoned athletes. Yep.
And so when you look at the stats that I mentioned earlier, and even the ones in this year and 2017, those don't have those beginner gains in them. So the gains we're talking about are from athletes have been racing. They're triathletes. They've, you know, they're engaged in the sport.
So we're getting this quality data. You know, we've retooled and rebranded this now as the Preseason Project, which is what we know it as today. You know, with all the new technologies that have been rolled out in those developing years, and with the new rebranding, did the objectives change at all of what you were trying to learn from Preseason Project?
They did. In some ways, it was really cool because now we could increase the scale, we could learn faster, the decisions were more granular, we had better and more baseline groups, so we could measure and demonstrate groups. And we still needed, you know, a lot of new users to compare against that baseline group. So as we continued to do the program, we had that. We're able to look at these different athletes in different ways. One of the things that we started to do was when athletes came on, ask them, if you don't use TriDot, if you're not using TriDot, what are you going to do? You're going to be coached by, you know, are you going to train yourself? You're going to buy a coach-designed custom plan for you? Or are you going to have a coach-designed plan and monitor with you? And so we started, now we have four buckets. Not only use TriDot, not use TriDot, when did you use TriDot?
Yeah.
But when you didn't use TriDot, were you self-coached, buy a custom plan, or work with a coach ongoing, or use TriDot all the way up to your race?
So you established those four groups, and what were the results that you saw from all the participants in the modern day Preseason Project?
Yeah, so it's the same stats, and it's very uncanny how similar they are from year to year. You know, slightly
from that original group of 100 in 2011,
100 to 228 to, you know, continue to grow. So this year, I'll one group of that, and this is again the 70.3. Those doing only the 70.3 coming in through Preseason Project. This year, 2017 was 837. Their average training period over the whole time was 16 weeks for 70.3. So yeah, they're not doing other things. The group that did their training themselves, designed their own plan, they improved an average of 3 minutes and 16 seconds.
So over 4 months, somebody that decided to just kind of do their own training by themselves,
correct,
improved 3 minutes over 4 months.
Exactly. But wow, in their mind, they're not realizing that because they don't have the benchmarking.
Yeah.
They think, I couldn't do a half at all.
And
now I can.
Yeah.
So they went from, they have no, you know, they're not measuring threshold and stamina and all these things. Their stamina, you know, their threshold probably stayed consistent.
Yeah.
Didn't improve that much. And they improved their stamina over a 16-week period.
And they may have hit their time goal and they didn't realize that they could have done it so much faster.
They have no idea of the potential because they're a sample size of one. But they went from not being, you know, in shape, actively training or able to do a half or whatever to doing it. So that was an improvement. They couldn't do, you know, 13-mile half marathon and 56 miles.
Yeah, yeah. So bucket two past that was people that purchased a custom plan but didn't have a coach.
So now they have a quality training, you know, good principles and theories. This is the principles,
yeah,
theories.
On paper, it tells them what to do
looks
every day.
Looks great. And so they improved 9 minutes and 35 seconds.
Okay.
So the first one, I can give you some of the rates of comparisons in a second. But so they improved 9 minutes and 35 seconds. So almost, what, three times better?
Almost, yeah.
Than the self-designed.
So past there, bucket number three. Is people who have a coach, a coached plan, and they also are paying for the coach to help them with that plan.
So they're making those adjustments along the way. So that one, instead of just the custom plan, 9:35 improvement, they improved 12 minutes and 1 second. So more than 12 minutes. So
which that honestly, if you're an athlete, you're probably expecting that much.
30% more.
You're probably expecting, oh yeah, if I train myself, I can improve 12 minutes
right
over a baseline group.
So that's so a custom plan, adding a coach to help them, that shows the level of changes and optimization. I use the term loosely, they're not doing statistical optimization, but a coach working with that plan, they're going to improve 30% more. And that's just these ongoing decision-making, again, from theory, common practice, you know, experience of a coach, that was the average improvement.
So about 3 minutes for somebody self-coached, about 9.5 minutes for somebody who purchased a plan but didn't have a coach, yep. And now we're saying 12 minutes for somebody who had a coach help them.
Yep.
And so then we get to TryDot. Somebody who stuck with TryDot, how much more did it go up?
This is average, again, across a large sample size, 28 minutes. So that's 8.5 times more than someone coaching themselves, 2.9 times more than someone purchasing a custom plan, and 12 minutes or 2.4 times more than the 12 minutes than a coach working with them the whole time to optimize their training. So that's, and the stat, there's another stat out of there, the injury. They were 2.9 times less likely to get injured to the point that it interrupted their training.
So this gets into TryDot's, I don't want to say claim. I mean.
Brand promises. Yeah, there are promises. Here's what you will have.
TryDot is promising you're going to.
Better results.
Have better results. Well, there it is. And
less time
with fewer injuries. And so 2.9 fewer injuries.
And that's where all the numbers came from these stats. We bear them out year to year.
So now we're starting to get, like, super caught up to the present day, and we're in just the final years here, and the year I came in as an athlete. Talk to me about the changes to the preseason project in 2018.
So the structure didn't change. We was still the preseason project. The qualifications were the same. So that was all working really good. The biggest things here, it was the feedback. So you'd notice, like, from year to year, it's like very data-centric, testing new things, doing different things, you know, just the off season to the in season, now different groups of how they train. So that's changing kind of, you know, not exactly every other year, but kind of. And then in the other years, we're looking at feedback, education, just different aspects of how, now that we have this, how do we educate athletes for the first time and get them engaged in their training. So that was a big focus of the optimization, the education, and then building community. And that was really what John was instrumental in, that education community side of things.
So this is where we really began to expand our social network communications and community. What started off as just a small support group for preseason project athletes has now grown into a community of thousands of athletes that is well beyond preseason project, where they started as preseason project participants. And really, it was the intent to have the opportunity to ask questions and share experience, that sort of thing, now has really grown into a very valuable portion of the TryDot community. It's kind of the Monday through Friday extrapolation of I am TryDot. Whereas as on the weekend, we're out on the race course, Monday through Friday, we're communicating and engaging and having community through the Facebook group. So the I Am TryDot Facebook group that now has thousands of members and hundreds of posts a day and is a great place to connect and ask and do all those things that we do actually started off as a group of preseason project athletes there just to ask questions and be able to communicate with TryDot, ask questions, that sort of thing. So that's been really exciting to see where initially our focus was all around training and software and technology. Once those things were kind of scaled, we were able to branch out and now provide, in addition to excellent training, now we have excellent community as well. And it's probably a toss-up as to what people really appreciate more. Do they love the training? Do they love the community? And I would argue both.
Yeah, and I think this is another chance to underscore. I've been talking stats and numbers and groups, you know, but those are real people.
Real athletes.
Yeah, and so we're kind of summarizing milestones going over a decade of stuff, but every single one of these has been athletes engaging in their training in the off season and listening and caring and doing something different and learning about something, going with the free for feedback and taking the time to fill out things and give us specific feedbacks of how we could improve. And what John's talking about now and asking for the non-coached option, all of these things have instrumentally not only changed our algorithms, but our infrastructure, the way we educate, the way this community, we didn't say, hey, let's create a community. The community created the community. We said, let's help them. And then they started engaging, answering each other's questions, encouraging each other, just trusting, here's what happened to me, here's what my success, just trust the process, believe these slogans are not our slogans. They came from the athletes. Mm-hmm. The pricing structure came from the athletes, the non-coach option, the data. This is one of the things that I've set out from the very beginning in 2005 when I was looking at the research and saw these expert coaches and pros and all of these different people that had books and videos and all this stuff, and they were conflicting. So that's one of the things back in 2005 that I noticed is you have experts and coaches and they'd written books and they were kind of, really dedicated and had to live by what they wrote, what their name was on the line, their reputation, and they were all conflicting. And I said, I want to build something that's not constrained or conflicted to the way I see
it. If we learn something and it's different, we can implement it.
Yeah, if an athlete comes in and says in one thing and four more people say, yeah, then we're going that direction. If their data comes in, what works is what the data says works, not what I wrote a book about or someone else wrote a book about or, hey, this is my mentor. It's not about any of that. It's the data. It goes where the data goes. Algorithms go where the data goes. Community goes where the athletes go. So what you see and what the athletes benefit from today is those 2013, 14, 15, 17 preseason project athletes, free for feedback athletes that are online sharing and encouraging and lifting them up. It's awesome. I get more passionate about that than I do the data.
Clearly.
And that's saying something because he gets excited about data.
He really gets excited about data.
And that ties back into the I Am TriDot story, in the I Am TriDot moniker of TriDot is based on actual data from real people. And these individuals are the building blocks of TriDot. If it weren't for these actual people doing actual training,
actual results,
then we would be no different than anyone else.
We would be guessing at what could
exactly
improve an
athlete.
Trial and error, theory, philosophy.
Exactly. So that is perhaps more than anything what sets TriDot apart is that it is based on real people, real athletes. I am TriDot. We are TriDot. That's what it is. TriDot is nothing without athlete data.
And I know something that we're excited about, and this is getting a little ahead to this year, but for 2020, preseason project for the first time is now going out into Europe. And so if you're listening to us and you're a triathlete in Europe and you found the podcast, and hey, go catch the preseason project and be one of our first batch of European athletes that start growing TriDot training and contributing to this movement, contributing to this data set that improves us all from Europe.
Absolutely. Yeah, probably we've had athletes from about 20 different countries and it's just spilled over word of mouth or they just found us. I don't know how. And we've had hundreds in different countries, but we've never marketed there. We've never publicized there. So it's been super exciting, very well received. Cindy, all of our coaches are running the orientation calls and different coaches. It's just been great feedback.
And we have the Preseason Project Europe Facebook group that's gone up that I see every single day, dozens of athletes joining and super excited to see the data and the personalities and the athletes that come out of Europe. I know for me, it's going to be a problem, John, seeing all of them post about what races they're doing. It's just going to make me jealous. I'm going to want to fly over and people are already like, oh, I'm doing I Am Barcelona and I'm doing this half and that half. And it's all like, oh, those places sound so much cooler than Texas. So without getting too far ahead, that was a little aside. Let's talk about 2019 because 2019 did bring, some new developments to the preseason project. Tell me about that year, Jeff.
Well, that was really facing. We've always been from the core, from the inside optimization engine out, that core is first, and then we improve everything out, whether it's education. This year, the 2019 was more about the new website, the progressive web app where you can download on your app, and a more intuitive onboarding process that guided the athletes better, fewer questions, more, and that led to more engagement. They got it. They understood. So that was about a year effort to go back and do the studies and focus groups and kind of figure that out. A lot of thanks to a lot of our beta testers on that. And then just improving the results continue to improve, adding some different things. A big thing was really taking a lot of steps forward with our machine learning. And then going into 2020, if I can jump ahead a little bit, and the work actually started as the genetics work. And that actually started the research back in 2014. So a lot of things everything that we see on the website, it didn't just get hatched there. There's years of pre-work that came to lead up to that point to introduce it. So that started in 2016. And then we had some beta testers go through earlier, beta athletes, not so much testers, but just using the software. And so I'm super excited. That's a 2020 thing, being able to, based on the athlete's actual genetics, optimize their training. And then, as we've done, take those results and build on them and further improve and optimize as the years go on. So again, athletes participating in that, uploading their genome and tracking, looking, learning, improving more, staying healthier.
And if you want to hear more about that, go check out
tridot.com/genetics. So
I was going to say podcast episode 7 where we talked all about it. But yeah, the website's good too.
Yeah, the podcast, what was that? Harnessing your DNA?
Harnessing your DNA to unleash your
training potential.
Yes, your training potential. Yeah, very good, very good. Guys, we take our podcast naming very seriously here. We want to nail those names. Yeah, so that really gets us where we are today. So all the athletes listening who have come on over the years of Preseason Project, they probably got to hear, oh, that was the year I came on. Just knowing that TriDot listens to athletes, takes their feedback to heart, wants to just put out the best product possible, is something that we're also bleeding over into the podcast. Because I got to tell you, we get athlete feedback. You know, we want to push up questions and topics that people care about. And feedback that I've been getting that I want to just, while we're talking about athlete feedback, I've gotten some notes. I've gotten a Facebook message or two where people are like, Andrew, love the podcast. You're doing a great job. I'm learning a ton. For the love, can you stop saying triathlon? It's two syllables, triathlon. And what's so funny about this is like you hear the little intro at the start of the show that just kind of talks about us as a brand.
Yep.
Like we made sure that voiceover artist knew to say triathlon and not triathlon.
Yeah.
Because in his first draft, he said triathlon. And I was like, oh, that's not right. But then some viewers started saying, hey, Andrew, you're saying triathlon. And I was like, oh, no, am I? So, hey, apologies to all the listeners. If that's been driving you nuts, I'm doing my best. I'm trying to fix it. I'm listening to the feedback of the people. I will say this. We have recorded a bunch of episodes that have not been published yet before I started getting this feedback. So from time to time, you're still going to hear it.
Be merciful.
But I'm working on it. John, Jeff, Elizabeth, and Jeff Rains are keeping me accountable. There's been once or twice where Jeff Rains has been like, hey, you just said triathlon. You need to re-record that. And I'm like, oh my gosh. So thanks so much for your feedback. If you have any topics, comments, things you want to hear us talk about on the podcast, you know, shoot me an email, podcast@tridot.com. And a huge shout out to all of our Preseason Project athletes from over the years for contributing.
Thank you.
Their data.
It's been a privilege.
And we're going to keep it going.
Yep.
Great set, everyone. Let's cool down.
If you are a longtime TriDot podcast listener, you have heard pro triathlete and TriDot coach Elizabeth James share a ton of her tri tips and expertise. But today I've asked her to come on and share a little bit of her experience with entering into the TriDot community through the Preseason Project. Elizabeth, take it away.
Well, I really appreciate this opportunity. Thank you so much, Andrew. And what I'm going to share now is certainly not to be boastful, but instead to try and demonstrate the value of TriDot's training and just how much I would have been missing had I never heard of TriDot's Preseason Project. In late 2014, I signed up for TriDot through Free for Feedback, which was an earlier iteration of Preseason Project after registering for my first full Ironman event. At that time, I had completed some triathlons, including a 70.3 distance event, but would very much still be considered a beginner. I had just purchased a road bike and was swimming all of my triathlon events using the breaststroke for the swim portions because I didn't know how to freestyle. And I knew that after signing up for Ironman Wisconsin as my first full distance event that I was going to need some support, some structure, some guidance to really reach the finish line and actually achieve my goal of becoming an Ironman. One of the first things that I noticed coming on board with Preseason Project and really appreciated about the training with TriDot is that it met the needs that I had as a stronger runner, a newer cyclist, and then basically a non-swimmer. Even after just a few months, I was really impressed with the progress that I was making in each discipline. And since the training was personalized to my current level of fitness and experience in each discipline, I found that I was training less than I previously had been, and yet at the same time was making better gains. This was especially important to me because I was working full-time and attending evening classes to earn my master's degree. So that time element was incredibly valuable. I continued to train following my training plan throughout 2015, and then that September at Ironman Wisconsin had finished in about 13 and a half hours, placed 22nd in my age group. I accomplished exactly what I set out to do that day, become an Ironman. And after crossing that finish line, then the question soon became, what's next? In fact, I distinctly remember John asking me that exact question and encouraging me to set a new goal for myself. And I had told him that I had secretly dreamed of someday racing in Kona. And as we discussed my performance in Wisconsin and my long-term goals within the sport, my sights were really set on that Kona qualification. So over the next, I'd say, year and a half, I diligently followed tryout training and gained speed and strength in each discipline. In April 2017, I raced Ironman Texas and dropped almost 3 hours off my previous Ironman finish time. That was a huge win for me. But coming in third place in my age group, I had missed Kona by one slot. So while it was temporarily disappointing, it also provided me that motivation to know that I was close and I was capable of reaching that goal. So in September 2017, I raced Ironman Chattanooga, won my age group, and punched my ticket to Kona. 2018 was kind of focused on my Kona performance, and after a fantastic, albeit humbling experience in Hawaii, I was eager to seek another world qualification and set my sights on winning my age group in a 70.3 event for 2019. So accomplished that goal in October 2019 at Waco 70.3, and somewhat ironically, I won't be competing in New Zealand at the end of 2020 as I journey into competing as a professional. So I really, you know, whether you've got your sights on racing on the Big Island someday, or you're looking to do your first triathlon, PR your next event, tackle a new distance, I could not encourage you more to look into TriDot. I'm proud to say that while training with TriDot, I've achieved athletic accomplishments that I truly thought were not possible for myself. And now I have the joy of sharing, you know, this with others. I'm so thankful for the preseason project, as it was my introduction to TriDot and really my future in the sport.
Well, that's it for today, folks. I want to thank TriDot founder Jeff Buer and coach John Mayfield for taking a long walk down memory lane to teach us all about the preseason project. Also, a big thanks to coach Elizabeth James for sharing her personal story of becoming a part of TriDot through the preseason project. Shout out to TriTats for partnering with us on today's show. Head to TriTats.com to get the tats you need to show up race ready for your next event. Enjoying the podcast? Have any triathlon questions or topics you want to hear us talk about? Email us at podcast@tridot.com or head to tridot.com/podcast to let us know what you're thinking. We'll do it again soon. Until then, happy training.
Thanks for joining us. Make sure to subscribe and share the TriDot podcast with your triathlon crew. For more great Tri content and community, connect with us on Facebook, YouTube, and Instagram. Ready to optimize your training? Head to TriDot.com and start your free trial today. TriDot, the obvious and automatic choice for triathlon training.